This is Viewpoint with attorney and author Chuck Crismeyer. Viewpoint is a one-hour open-line talk show confronting the issues of America's heart and home. To express your viewpoint, please call 804-754-1988. That's 804-754-1988. And now, with today's edition of Viewpoint, here is Chuck Crismeyer.
You may recall Jesus' words that said, "The harvest truly is plentiful, but the laborers are few." Well, put a new twist on that. The harvest truly is plentiful, but the organs are many. How to get them? Who is going to be the laborer to get those organs that we need? That's what we want to talk about here on Viewpoint today. The next target for the so-called experts, organ donors. Of all America's problems, waning trust in our institutions like mad, and our institutions' lack of trustworthiness is among the biggest now. Some have always worried that doctors might be a little too quick to declare them dead in order to strip them of organs that might save other patients, called organ donations. But then maybe they weren't paranoid for no reason. Last month, the New York Times reported a growing number of patients, some of them gasping, crying, or showing other signs of life, are being faced with premature or bungled attempts to retrieve their organs. You think that's just guesswork? You think it's just some sort of strange report out there, conspiracy theory? No, it's not. It's real. And today we're going to talk about it here on Viewpoint. In fact, it's so real that seeing the growing exodus of those who are wanting and willing to be organ donors, registries are urging perspective that it's really not all that bad, and we desperately need these organs. We thought this was a problem with China, and indeed it is. We'll take a look at that here today on Viewpoint. But is America gradually becoming China? So I welcome you to the program. I'm Chuck Crismeyer. It's conversation as always with ever-increasing conviction, talk that transforms. And this is not just a matter of information, friends, because it's revealing something that is going on in the mind and heart of we the people in our country, including the medical profession. People are desperate. Doctors are desperate. Donation organizations are desperate. They want more organs. We got rid of the organs in our churches for the most part, but now they want more organs in our hospitals because people need to live. On the other hand, they're willing for people to die in order for others to live. And not to die of their own accord, but actually to have their organs removed when they're alive. And therein lies the problem, don't you think? And that's what we're going to be talking about here on the program today. In the latest issue of the Epoch Times, by the way, if you think this is just coming from one source, I have a whole variety of sources here on the broadcast desk today. But the latest issue of the Epoch Times has an article titled, "When Dead Enough Becomes a Metric." Dead enough. Dead enough for what? We used to have a phrase, in fact, it's still used today, good enough for government work. In other words, it doesn't matter quite how well you do the job, as long as you just get by and pretend to have done the job. Oh, well, it's good enough for government work. But how about in the medical professions? Is it just good enough to suppose that somebody is dead enough that we can go begin to take their organs when they're still alive? That's the problem. So the article begins, "The heart monitor flatlines, the family weeps, the doctors wait exactly 75 seconds and then restart the procedure. In the world of organ transplants, dead enough has become a moving target." The New York Times reported something most people aren't ready to hear. In the rush to expand organ transplants, procurement teams have sometimes started too early. Not after death, but before death was fully established. And this isn't just investigative journalism, writes the author. It's official. In July, that's last month, the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services released the results of a federal investigation into the transplant system. They said hospitals allowed the organ procurement process to begin when patients showed signs of life. And according to Health Secretary Robert F. Kennedy Jr., this is horrifying, and I think you would agree. Unless, of course, you need an organ and are willing to have somebody else's life taken from them to give you their life. But this is happening under a protocol called donation after circulatory death. Notice the language. You see, words count. And they've decided to come up with a new idea. Well, it's not really a new idea. It's an old idea that's been practiced in China for, well, since the year 2000 for sure. But it's happening under this protocol called donation after circulatory death that they label DCD. DCD, donation after circulatory death. Notice they don't say after death. They say after circulatory death. And it's a fundamental difference from the more established practice of donation after brain death, where patients have irreversibly lost all brain function. These DCD patients, though, still have brain activity. They're dying, but not yet dead. Doctors determine they're near death and won't recover, but that's a medical judgment call, not a biological certainty. And therein lies the problem. Why is this being done? How is it that possible that this could be done in the name of medicine that supposedly follows the Hippocratic Oath, do no harm? If you're going to take an organ from someone who is still living, and you know is still living, how can you say with a straight face that you're doing no harm? It's one thing to be able to have the free will donation of an organ, if indeed you truly are dead, but that's not what's happening now. This is a whole new revolution of medicine. Why is it happening? What is the root of this? Is it just the need for donors, or the need for organs, or is there other, are there other motivational factors that are involved? Like maybe the love of money is the root of all evil? So this is what we're going to be talking about here on the program today, and I'm glad that you've joined us. It's conversation, as always, with ever-increasing conviction, talk that transforms. You see, the spirit that is driving this new, more broadly used system, DCD, donation after circulatory death, is actually part of a bigger spiritual picture reflecting how far our country has deviated from our history, from our dedication, in fact, from the fear of the Lord itself. When there's no fear of God, there's nothing else to fear. We'll just take other people's organs, even if they're still living. Is that murder? What would you call it? We'll talk about that. And how about the condition of our own minds and hearts to justify that which is unjustifiable?
Once upon a time, children could pray and read their Bibles in school. Divorces were practically unknown, as was child abuse. In our once great America, virginity and chastity were popular virtues, and homosexuality was an abomination.
So what happened in just one generation?
Hi, I'm Chuck Crismeyer, and I urge you to join me daily on Viewpoint, where we discuss the most challenging issues touching our hearts and homes. Could America's moral slide relate to the Fourth Commandment?
Listen to Viewpoint on this radio station or anytime at saveus.org.
Welcome back to Viewpoint. I'm Chuck Crismeyer. DCD used to be rare. Now it accounts for a huge and growing number of transplants every day. 13 people perish waiting for organs that never come. That urgency is real, and it explains why the system feels pressure to expand every possible avenue for donation. But saving lives by potentially taking them prematurely isn't salvation, is it? It's a different kind of death sentence. And this isn't even a debate about whether transplants save lives. They do. It's about something more fundamental, the line between life and death being treated as a flexible scheduling variable. Death is the ultimate divide between life, between a being and a non-being, between consciousness and void. And modern medicine promised precision, neurological death, cardiac arrest, clinical criteria that could mark the exact moment when a person becomes a body. But when death becomes a protocol instead of a reality, something essential is lost. We're talking about the moment a human being ceases to exist as a conscious entity and becomes, in the system's calculus, a collection of harvestable parts. In other words, the human being is nothing but a place, a building to go to find replacement parts for a machine that's breaking down. They're no longer a human being. Not really. They're just a source for more parts. And who gets to benefit from the more parts? Well, someone who is in a serious physical situation, in other words, their body or their machine is breaking down, the parts aren't working right. And the doctor gets to be blessed by the immense financial benefits that he gets. And the hospital, oh my goodness, what they get to benefit from, the massive influx of money for these amazing organ transplants. Some have said, well, love makes the world go around. Others have said money makes the world go around. Some have said oil makes the world go around. But what is it that makes this world go around? This medical world that's willing to justify changing the language to make it sound more official, to make it sound more medical, in order to justify taking organs when they consider a person dead enough to go in and excise those organs. And what's the definition of dead enough? Well, that becomes negotiable. The donor designation on your driver's license represents more than a medical consent, says the Epoch Times in its latest issue, titled When Dead Enough Becomes a Metric. It's a spiritual contract. That is, your donor designation on your driver's license represents not just a medical consent, but a spiritual contract about what happens to the vessel that carried your consciousness through life. So one patient pulled his knees to his chest while being prepped for organ removal, only to have the medical staff dismiss that action as, quote, meaningless reflexes, unquote. In Alabama, a woman was wheeled into surgery after being declared dead. But when surgeons made their first incision, they found her heart moving, her chest rising and falling with gasping respirations. They were slicing into her while she was alive. So it's meaningless to whom? Is that in that gesture, that involuntary pulling inward, is that beating heart discovery too late? That the fundamental question, what if something essential still inhabits that body? What if the divide between life and death isn't a clean line, rather a liminal space we're rushing too quickly into? And how about the incentive? When hospitals are graded on what they call conversion rates, a term that would make both a used car salesman and a theologian blush, they're measuring how efficiently they transform dying humans into spare parts. Did you hear that? Conversion rates. How efficiently doctors and hospitals transform dying humans into spare parts. organ procurement organizations have federal contracts to keep their performance judged on throughput. In other words, getting the job done. But the numbers tell the story. Donation after circulatory death has tripled since 2019. Nearly 20% of organs now skip the official waiting list entirely, up from just 3% in 2020. 55 medical workers across 19 states have witnessed these disturbing cases. In Kentucky alone, federal investigators found 73 patients with neurological signs incompatible with organ donations. In other words, they were still living, but they were being prepared for harvesting. So when you measure the system that way, more and faster becomes a worldview that redefines the threshold between life and death. For operational efficiency, of course. So efficiency is the only thing that matters. Not truth, not life. So is this, in effect, a legalized or a medical legalized version of murder? Or is it some other form, maybe not murder, but maybe some other legal terminology used to describe other forms of taking a life? One surgical technician told the New York Times after watching a crying responsive patient sedated and removed from life support, said, "I felt like if she had been given more time on the ventilator, she could have pulled through. I felt like I was part of killing someone." And she quit her job afterward, just traumatized by participating in what she felt like an institutional murder disguised as a medical protocol. And that's what it was. And this risk isn't hypothetical. The protocol says that 2 minutes without a pulse, then it's 75 seconds. Then it's sufficiently non-responsive. Each time we shave seconds off the waiting period, we're not just adjusting medical protocols, we're redefining what it means to be dead. We're treating the mystery of consciousness as if it were a software bug to be optimized away. And it's not just a transplant problem. It's the operating system of modern institutions. We saw it in the pandemic when case definitions of hospitalizations varied dramatically based on different criteria, generating wildly different case counts depending on which metrics the institutions chose to emphasize. We saw it in nursing homes, medical care, Medicare payment rules. All kinds of things changed then during COVID. We see it in pharmaceutical approvals, where FDA's accelerated approval pathway came under fire for approving drugs based on surrogate endpoints rather than proven clinical benefit, with so-called confirmatory trials often delayed and some drugs later proven ineffective or never tested at all. So, look at the issue of trust here, friends. This is a monstrous issue. Trust isn't built by press releases. But that's what the donor institutions are trying to do. They're trying to say, look, this is just some errant kind of thing. This isn't really going on. It's just so rare. No, it's not rare, and it's getting more and more sanctified by the medical institution. So without trust in the sanctity of the process, the system designed to save lives just collapses under the weight of its own utilitarian shortcuts. In other words, whatever works, whatever we got to do to make this happen, come on, let's get it on. Let's get this organ out of here. We need these organs. Come on, we'll shorten the time for somebody's life. We'll decide whatever it's going to be. We'll use our own whim to decide because we want to get this organ and we want to get it now. What are we going to do? What is the problem? The problem is spiritual. The problem is not medical, it's spiritual. We have decided to rationalize something that is cannot be rationalized. Life and death. It is very possible that you have heard of accounts of people who, they were having a funeral for a person, and the person suddenly sat up, started talking. Or how about the person that was in the casket that was being carried for burial, and they heard pounding, strange pounding, and the person was alive. What we're witnessing, says the Epoch Times, isn't a series of medical errors to be corrected, but evidence of a civilizational shift that has already happened. We've moved from a culture that approached mortality with awe and uncertainty, the one that treats it as an operational challenge to be managed efficiently. And the countdown isn't stating we're already deeply into it. Already deeply into it. At its core, this isn't about transplant science. It's about the sovereignty over the body and soul at the most vulnerable moment of all. The legitimacy of the transplant apparatus rests entirely on the public's belief that determination of mortal honor, both biological reality and metaphysical mystery, that the moment of transition is marked with precision, consistency, and zero institutional self-interest. But this is marked with overwhelming self-interest. Every donor registry signature represents a final act of trust by you that medicine will honor your life and death with equal reverence, that the frontier between existence and non-existence will be treated as inviolable rather than convenient. You break that trust, and no number of procurement reforms will solve the organ shortage. It will be solved by empty registries and closed caskets. In other words, the people that are going to suffer are those who needed the organs, because ultimately the people will not trust to sign their willing donations on death. So if dead enough becomes a metric, a measurement, the countdown has already started, not just for the patient, but for our collective faith in medicine's ability to serve something higher than its own efficiency. So because we once accepted dying as a managerial decision rather than a spiritual reality, we're no longer just optimizing a framework. We're reprogramming the moral code of civilization itself. Now think about it. Civilizations don't survive long when they forget what matters most. And when they do, the harvest always comes. First the body, and then the soul. So when the sacred is subordinated to the schedule, it's not only bodies that are harvested. The whole society is harvested. What a piece of writing by Josh Stileman for the Epoch Times, when dead enough becomes the measurement or a metric. I ask you right now, what is your innermost reaction to this? What is your innermost reaction? Now, let's suppose that you yourself were the beneficiary of somebody else's organ. Does it change your response to this condition, this situation that's arisen in our society, in America? In God we trust, we said. We used to fear God, and now, when the fear of God has been cast aside for the past 50, 60 years, life itself now can be dispensed with much greater ease. We're not accountable to God anymore. We're just accountable to the accountant, to the hospital, the bottom line, or how many numbers of transplants we can measure. Is that the real measurement? Much more will we go to China after this.
There is so much more about Chuck Crismier and Save America Ministries on our website, saveus.org. For example, on the front page are two great videos. First, an interview and discussion of Chuck's book, Out of Egypt. Also, a great TV interview with Chuck regarding his book, Seduction of the Saints. Much more videos, a For Pastors Only section, and also you can view Chuck's weekly teachings, all at his website, saveus.org. That's saveus.org. Also on Chuck's website, listen to Chuck's Viewpoint broadcast. Listen to the archives. Maybe you missed a program. Check it out at saveus.org. Also, there are some great resources, hospitality information, also information about marriage, divorce, and remarriage, newsletters, articles, prophecy, prayer and revival information, all at saveus.org.
Medicine has drafted its own exception clause. Exception clause to the Ten Commandments. The Ten Commandments say, thou shalt not kill. The medical profession now says, thou shalt not kill unless you want to harvest somebody's organ to try to keep somebody else alive. In other words, isn't this exactly the same kind of thinking that took place in the Garden of Eden with Adam and Eve? God said, don't eat of the tree of the knowledge of good and evil, for in the day you eat of it, you shall surely die. And so when God created Eve out of Adam, married them, and said, do not divide what God has joined together, man must not put asunder. In other words, they're one. Then along comes Satan, the deceiver. And he asks Eve, did God say that you should not eat of the tree of the knowledge of good and evil? Oh, yes, he did say that. Did he say that you should not surely die? Yes. But Satan put in the invariable but, that medicine has now put in the whole issue of organ transplant. Organ transplant was supposed to be till death do you part. Now they say, till we think you might be dying. Oh. So Satan said to Eve, look, didn't God say that? He said, and you repeated, he said you should not eat of that tree. But the reason God said that was, what? He knows that you're going to be like him, knowing good and evil. So he insinuated an alternative view to put a spin on what God had said. You see, thou shalt not eat of the tree, thou shalt not kill. So medicine now puts a spin on thou shalt not kill, the Ten Commandments, and says, except. Thou shalt not kill except. Now, we're not talking about a situation of self-defense. We're not talking about a situation of war. We're talking about a situation of basic life and medicine that commits to do no harm. But if it suits our fancy, if it makes us some extra bucks, if it helps us to increase our numbers of those we saved because of those whose lives we took prematurely, then we can justify it. You're beginning to see the picture. Because we have abandoned the fear of the Lord in America, largely, in large measure, even in the Christian mind and heart, you may think that's a little stretch. It's not a stretch at all. It's the same kind of thinking that has justified the massive divorce rate in the last 60 years. And the remarriage when our spouses are still living that Jesus said is adultery. How did we justify it? How did we improve? Because we abandoned the fear of the Lord and decided to listen to Satan's spin saying, yes, but. Thou shalt not commit adultery, yes, but. I hate divorce, yes, but. You get the point? The problem is we have caused, shall we say, spiritual justification. And we're not talking about justification in our relationship with God. We're talking about the rationalization in our minds to justify that which God says he doesn't approve of or he hates. So God hates killing. He made man in his image. He created life. And we say that the God who gave us life gave us liberty. How can a person have liberty when a doctor feels free to take their life in order to give life to somebody else? Are you beginning to get the bigger picture here? It really is a much bigger picture. Now, I want to give you a way to help understand how great this matter of the fear of the Lord really is. A few years ago, God prompted me to write a book based upon Psalm 25:14. The secret of the Lord is with those who fear him, and to them he will reveal his covenant. The secret of the Lord, that which most people don't realize, the secret of the Lord is with those who fear him. He didn't say those that love him, he said those that fear him. And to them, he would reveal and make manifest his covenant. Jesus put it differently in John chapter 14. He said, if you love me, you'll do my will. You'll keep my word. If you don't love me, you won't obey me. But if you do love me and obey me because you fear me, because I'm God, then I and my Father will manifest ourselves to you. Now, I want that. I don't know about you, but I want that. I desperately need to have God manifest himself to me by spirit and by truth. And Jesus said he would effectuate that if we would obey him. But we don't like the word obey today. It's become the most hated word in the church. Why is that? Because we don't fear God anymore. And when you don't fear God, you're going to fear man. Well, guess what? This now is revealing how something that otherwise could have been good and holy and life-saving is being twisted in order to undermine its very purpose for secular and wicked purposes, the motivations of the heart. And out of the heart spews all force of wickedness. Jeremiah talked about that. The heart is deceitful above all things and desperately wicked. Who can know it? And now it's being revealed now in the depths of the medical profession that is justifying, well, dead enough. Dead enough for government work, dead enough for medical work, because we need those organs and we're going to justify killing somebody else when we know they're not really dead. We know they're not dead, but we're going to kill them anyway and take the organ out of them even while they're living. And friends, that's exactly what China has been doing. Exactly what China has been doing. By the way, get a copy of the book, The Secret of the Lord. It's about how to understand and comprehend the fear of the Lord. The secret of the Lord is with those who fear him, and to them he will show his covenant. Did you know that every single promise of God, every promise of God, including salvation itself, is based or founded upon the fear of the Lord? If you don't fear God, you won't repent. You don't believe that there's a serious death penalty for your sin. You won't believe it because you don't fear God. You see, everything is predicated on the fear of the Lord, but then all hope and joy and blessing, all the blessings of God are predicated on the fear of the Lord. Get a copy of the book. I don't think you're going to be disappointed. You're going to find something that you never really understood. It's not really taught in our churches. Why isn't it taught? For the same reasons that the medical profession is justified seeing that somebody's just dead enough to take their organ. Why is that? Well, if we tell people about the fear of the Lord, it won't sell well. We won't be able to grow our churches fast enough because it sounds negative. And if it sounds negative, then how are we going to convince people and seduce them to come in and sit in our pews so that we can justify the greater numbers in our congregation and report it in all of our statistics to the denomination or wherever else? And when we go to sell our books, we can say that we have a 20,000-member congregation, and people then will buy our books. You see how it works? I'm telling you, that's exactly how it works in the evangelical economy. Because I work inside that, and that's what I see. Now, get a copy of the book, The Secret of the Lord. It is a $20 book, yours for $15. It's a hardbound book. It's a beautiful book. Read it slowly. Absorb it. I think you'll be blessed. It's on our website, saveus.org, saveus.org. You can call us at 1-800-SAVE-USA. That's 1-800-SAVE-USA. Or write to us at Save America Ministries, P.O. Box 70879, Richmond, Virginia, 23255. And if you're writing a check, add $6 for postage and handling. You see, unless we recover the fear of the Lord, starting in God's own house, how can we expect the rest of the country to recover it? They've got to see it in God's house. They've got to see it in our house. And the way we conduct ourselves, the choices that we make, the way we rationalize that which we know doesn't please God. You know, I'm thinking, even as I mention those words, I'm saying, okay, Lord, where does that fit for me? You see, because if I share these things with you, then I've got, if I have one finger pointing out to you, then I've got three fingers pointing back to me. I have to consider these things because I'm just like you are. Now, we go to China. The United Nations scrutinized China's forced organ harvesting at the Human Rights Council meeting. In a historic development, the United Nations Human Rights Council once again brought global attention to the alarming allegations of forced organ harvesting in China. The session was held in Geneva in March of 2025. The international community expressed grave concern over credible evidence pointing toward systematic forced organ harvesting, targeting prisoners of conscience, including Falun Gong practitioners, Uyghur Muslims, Tibetans, and other minority groups like Christians. The meeting marked a crucial point in addressing the continued human rights abuses in China, bringing fresh scrutiny to Beijing's controversial organ transplantation industry. It's an industry, friends. It's not just an industry in America, in China. It's an industry now in America. Oh, much more to talk about in the next 12 and a half minutes. Hang in there, my friends. This is Viewpoint.
Have you ever considered what the early church was like? Many people are developing a heart longing for greater fulfillment in our practices as Christians. A recent study showed 53,000 people a week are leaving the back door of America's churches in frustration. What is going on? Why has there not been even a 1% gain among followers of Christ in the last 25 years? Could it be that God is seeking to restore first century Christianity for the 21st century? Jesus said, "I'll build my church." Is Christ by His Spirit stirring to prepare the church for the 21st century? The early church prayed together and broke bread from house to house. They were family, and it was said by all who observed, "Behold how they love one another." Incredible.
But the same can be found right now. Go to saveus.org and click Sell Church. We can revive first century Christianity for the 21st century.
It's about people, not programs. It's about a body, not a building.
That's saveus.org. Click Sell Church.
February 14th, 2024 marked the 26th annual National Donor Day, which is an observance dedicated to spreading awareness and education about organ, eye, and tissue donation. In 2022, there were 157,000 solid organ transplants reported. That was a 9% increase from the previous year. While organ donation in many nations is completely voluntary, at least supposedly, and by consent of the donor or their immediate family members, only a significant portion of the world's population is still living under the threat of forced organ harvesting. Unlike organ donation, organ harvesting is a form of organ transplantation practiced against the victim's will and has been outlawed in many states, including China. So, we know that to be the case, and we know that it's going on in China, and we know that it is horrific. But if hospitals are caught harvesting organs in the United States of America from living patients, how does that differentiate us from China? We're just not involved in it at the same level, right? Headline from the Hong Kong Post. Global outcry. UN scrutinizes China's forced organ harvesting at Human Rights Council meeting. Next. Inside China's sick plot to build empire of organ harvesting centers in 5 years. With donors already, well, they're already there. So China's regime is significantly expanding its empire of organ harvesting in a twisted bid to make money. A plot to establish 6 new sites in the Uyghur Autonomous Region by 2030 has stoked fears of forced organ removal given staggeringly low donation rates in the region. In other words, the Uyghurs are not ready and willing to donate. So China says, okay, then we'll take your organ. China's organ trade is already estimated to have a market value of $1 billion per year, which the communist government wants to swell. A liver transplant, for example, can cost around 160,000 pounds in China, but with a much shorter waiting time compared to the rest of the world. So that draws not only recipients from inside the sprawling nation, but also unsuspecting international visitors who travel there for a transplant. China's regime has long been accused of orchestrating a non-consensual organ harvesting campaign against persecuted minorities. Prisoners are known to be killed specifically for the extraction of their organs. Experts say the primary victims of forced organ harvesting are those who follow Buddhist Gong and meditation practices of the Falun Gong. They also believe that incarcerated Uyghurs fall victim. So new facilities are planned to open their autonomous region, 6 new institutions to extract Uyghurs' organs without permission. In other words, kill the Uyghur in order to get their organs. This is big business. Part of a sickening plot to detain Uyghurs as a living organ donation bank. So, Uyghur detainees have reported forced blood tests, ultrasounds, and organ-focused medical scans while in custody. Why? With the chilling prospect of organ compatibility testing. The guise is that all organs will come from voluntary donations. But that is not what's happening. So, we've known this was coming from China. Now, in addition to that, we have trafficking, not for sexual purposes, but for organ purposes. Trafficking in persons for the purpose of organ removal, one of the least reported and least understood forms of trafficking, but one that experts believe is growing. It's ultimately a crime that exploits human beings for economic profit. Trafficking in persons for the purpose of organ removal, a form of trafficking in which an individual is exploited for their organ, including by coercion, deception, and abuse of a position of vulnerability. I have in my hands a very long article that is talking about this trafficking for organ harvesting and how they do it. Kidneys are the most organ involved. Other organs and tissues such as livers, corneas, or skin are also sought. Victims may not be paid at all, or they may receive some payment, or they may just be killed. They're seduced under false pretenses or saying that they're going to get a large number of money because they have, say, three kidneys instead of two. And so you can give up one of the three and everything will be fine. Everything will be wonderful. Everything will be cool. Doesn't work that way, as you well know. So we find that this is happening all over the world. China is the primary instigator of this. Is this the kind of society that we want to adopt? Is this why the Democrat Party has such a love affair for China? Hospitals caught harvesting organs from living patients. Following the results of a harrowing investigation, the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services announced July 20th that it has begun a comprehensive reform aimed at ending the practice of procuring organs while donors still show signs of life in the United States of America. The findings came to light after the HRSA ordered the Organ Procurement and Transportation Network to reopen a case that the Biden administration had closed. The case had involved the actions that caused potentially preventable harm to a neurologically injured patient. Reopening the case led to examine 351 cases where organ donation was authorized but ultimately not completed, according to the release. Of these, 103 cases, 29% of them showed concerning features, including 73 patients with neurological signs incompatible with organ donation. In other words, the people were still alive, but were justified by the doctors to have their organs removed while they were still alive and therefore kill them. At least 28 patients may not have been deceased at the time organ procurement was initiated, raising serious ethical and legal questions, the release said. And they're not even concerned about the spiritual conditions. The spiritual underlies it all, friends. When our hearts are not right, as Jeremiah said, the heart of man is deceptively evil, wicked, who can know it? In other words, we're prone to rationalize and justify just about anything, including breaking up our families. Rendering our children fatherless. For the past 50 years, about 1 million children a year. This is what we're capable of doing and what we do. And this is the reason why God is concerned about the condition of those who profess his name on the near edge of the second coming. He knows we're not prepared. He knows we're not walking in righteousness and in holiness, which he says that without holiness, no man will see the Lord. He knows that. Why do you think we talk about this here on this program? And many of you think, well, that's just negative. No, it's not negative. This is the most positive thing we can talk about. Because God wants us holy and righteous. He wants us to be prepared to enter into his presence upon the coming of the Lord. And somehow we rationalize that notwithstanding what we do or how we do it or for whatever reasons we do it, we're okay I'm okay, you're okay, everything's wonderful, everything's cool. That's what the doctors are doing. That's what the hospitals are doing. They're justifying what they're doing. The investigation by the government showed myriad reasons for the failures of the hospitals and doctors, including poor neurologic assessments, lack of coordination with medical teams, questionable consent practices, and misclassification of causes of death, particularly in overdose cases. A systematic disregard for the sanctity of life in the organ transplant system. Wow. So the House of Representatives was holding a subcommittee meeting July 22nd on organ donation safety lapses and how procurement and transplant organizations intend to improve the system to regain the trust of donors and their families. Well, guess how they're doing it? By press releases. Instead of changing their means, their ways, they want to give press releases to try to make the people feel better so they can continue on doing what they're doing. So, the U.S. House passed a bill to combat forced organ harvesting. The bill, authored by Representative Chris Smith of New Jersey, Republican, called the Stop Forced Organ Harvesting Act of 2023, had nearly unanimous support, passing in 412-2 vote. I'm not sure if it's been passed by the Senate yet. Individuals involved in the organ harvesting scheme could face sanctions blocking them from entering the U.S. and prohibiting them from engaging in transactions in property or interest in property within the country. Friends, the same thing is happening with regard to abortion. The baby harvesting business. Oh, yes. The baby harvesting business. These crimes are against humanity. Chris Smith said they're unimaginable. In China, he said, the Chinese Communist Party, between 60 and 100,000 young victims, average age 20, are murdered in cold blood to steal their internal organs. Elderly, high-ranking Chinese Communist Party officials have received replacement organs from the very people they despise and have killed to get the organs. Oh. You know, it's painful to bring this kind of information. And we're not bringing the information for purposes of just informing, but for the purpose of helping us to see, look behind the scenes as to what is driving this. It's the motivation of the heart. Whether it's pride, power, perks, or position, or all of the above that are involved. Money, numbers, statistics, reports, bragging rights, all of this is involved, but at the very heart of it, we have not only abandoned the love of the Lord, but we first abandoned the Spirit of the Lord and the fear of the Lord. And that's the problem. We need to recover it. If we have any hope in this country, we must recover the fear of the Lord. That's why I wrote the book, The Secret of the Lord. You need to get your copy. It's a hardbound book. It's a $20 book, yours for your gift of $15 to Save America Ministries. On the website, saveus.org. You can call us at 1-800-SAVE-USA. Write to us at $6 for postage and handling. And seriously consider becoming a partner, friends. We're daring to talk about the things that matter and going to the heart of the matter, not just reporting things for sensationalism, for change, for transformation. God bless.
You've been listening to Viewpoint with Chuck Chrismeyer. Viewpoint is supported by the faithful gifts of our listeners. Let me urge you to become a partner with Chuck as a voice to the church declaring vision for the nation. Join us again next time on Viewpoint as we confront the issues of America's heart and home.